Albanian blood. Not a gang, need my hand like I'm John Alida. All my brand Benjamins like I'm John Alida. John Alida.
Hey, welcome again to second week of the Johnny and Gene Show. We have a special guest with us today. And before I go into the special guest, I just want to say about the COVID-19 virus that's out. Please take it serious and let's give tribute to first responders, doctors, nurses, police officers, EMS, and anybody that's working, administrators or people working in the field to feed people. And some of the things that people in the States seem to come together during times of crisis and tragedy. Keep it in perspective, during the Kosovo war, we lost about 15,000 people in Albania. We well surpassed that here in the city, in New York City. Around the world and in the country, we're probably close to 200,000. And if China came back with real numbers, we're probably closer to 300,000 loss of life around the world. So it's a serious epidemic, pandemic. And we got to really be careful what we do. And people in prisons that we all know and that we worry about, and friends and family. Let's hope they keep safe. And also let's take a chance to tell people, like if you're locked down now 45 days and it seems like the end of the world, think about inmates that are in jails doing years at a time, just to keep the public understanding the perspective of the numbers and years they're getting for crimes. So I'm not saying every criminal in prison deserves a second chance. I'm not in agreement for pedophiles, obviously rapists, but I do advocate for most of the prisoners in the prison system. So hopefully they get a second chance and we can take a new look at people that are getting all kinds of time there. Maybe this should be an adjustment. I think now, more than ever, I think people will understand what it is to do 45 days in the comforts of their home. Imagine being in prison. Besides that, I want to talk a little bit about politics like we do every week now. If you're somebody believes in a police state, then I guess you believe in the Democratic Party that is no longer middle of the road. They're extreme leftists, left on the left side of going towards communism. They believe in a police state. They believe in big government. If you're not happy now where the government stands and you feel they're intervening in our lives with cameras and, you know, GPSs and things like that, go vote for a Democrat and you will see yourself in a serious police state, because that's where they're heading towards. To me, Biden took $1.5 billion from China. So when people look and ask, how can you vote for a guy that's an extreme leftist and he wants and he's in favor and in bed with China, he should actually, him and his family should be indicted for what they did for espionage. Forget about voting for a Democrat. And if we talk about Nancy Pelosi, she can't even control her own state. There's homeless people all over San Francisco. Yet they look at the president for help during this crisis, like Cuomo did here in New York. But when he stepped in and he helped New York, Cuomo told him mind his business when he wanted to reopen the city. So they want it both ways. At the same time, they're looking for a bailout, I believe, for about $7.5 billion. But yet they want to make it a sanctuary city. So if you can't afford running the city, why are you bringing in people that are living off freebies that don't belong in the country? So they don't make sense. If you guys that are out there to follow politics, you know, please take a step and something towards a president of the United States on your next ballot in about 200 days for President Trump, and keep America America. I mean, you know, every week I'll say something, and if somebody wants to address that, we can. People last week that listened to the show, people like Joey that was in Camden County with me, asked me a question, has Camden changed? Joey, from the days we were in there, there isn't 5 and 6 men in a cell anymore. They're back to 2-man cells. So some of the changes in the prison system is due to President Trump's agendas of changing the prison system, and I think in a positive direction. So people that don't understand, please follow and look up some of the jail systems and the reforms in the last couple of years. And hopefully we'll be keep going forward with that, reforming for people that we love in jail and our friends there and people that want a second chance in life, and they'll do what we're doing the right thing with that. I want to introduce my co-host as usual. It's Gene Borrello.
Hey, what's going on, everybody?
And a childhood friend of mine and a relative of Gene's, whose father was one of the biggest, toughest, nicest gangsters I know. In fact, it was made during the Albert Anastasia days. And this is his son, Anthony Ruggiano, who's been in the life forever, and his brother, Albert. This is Anthony, guys.
Hey, how are you, fellas? How's it going?
What's up, cuz? How you been,
not
buddy?
Not too much. Hey, listen, if I did what Joe Biden did, I would have got indicted for a RICO.
Oh, yeah. You'd be there in a life sentence for espionage. All of us would be there in a RICO case since we're friends. I mean, you know it is, Ant. It's almost crazy how they get away with this.
I know.
I mean,
my father told me when I was 16 that that was the real mafia.
Listen, what he did with Ukraine, what he did with Russia, and what he's doing with China, taking his son took $1.5 billion. I didn't say $1.5 million. I said $1.5 billion.
I know.
And he shut down our country with submarines outside of China. People don't realize that what he's done.
Yep, I know. So how's that?
They want to vote for him.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. Speaking of your father, what's that picture in the background?
The picture in the background, there's a story behind that picture. I was in John Gotti's house one day, and he had he has the portraits up on the wall in his house of his family.
Yeah.
So I was in his house one day, and I go, wow, those are nice portraits. Who did them? He says, some guy I was in a can with, he was a counterfeiter, and he became a portrait artist. So I had a little black and white picture in my pocket of that picture of my parents. And I took it out and I said, you think he can make a portrait out of that? He said, yeah, give me the picture. So I gave him the picture. And about 2 or 3 weeks later, he called me and he told me to come by his house. And he gave me that picture. That picture is about 40 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. It's my father when he was 26. And my mother, that was in my grandmother's backyard in Brooklyn. And my father just got straightened out. My mother's actually pregnant in that picture with me. Yeah, wow. My father just got straightened out when that picture was taken. Yeah, so, 26.
That was in the house in Ozone Park, wasn't it?
No, that was in Brooklyn, my father's mother.
What was the picture on 88th Street Park, the one that was over?
That was it. That was it. Yeah, it was on my wall because I got it. It's over 40 years old.
Right.
Yeah, that's the same. When I got that picture painted, I just got out of jail. I was living in Lindenwood on 79th Street. And then I moved to 88th Street and I hung it in my house on 88th Street. Yeah.
Hey, so the people that don't know you out there and the people that don't know your father, I got there's a couple of questions. And, you know, obviously me and Gene know from, you know, Gene being irrelevant, me being raised around your house since I'm a little kid. You know, we all ran around that. You lived a couple of doors off of Atlantic Avenue, 88th Street at the park there.
Right.
But why is it, and I know the answer to this, but why is it, tell people, why is it such a famous gangster like your father that was involved with Murder, Inc., with Albert Anastasia when he got straightened out? And, you know, why is it a lot of people don't know who he is? And he is one of the biggest gangsters around, your father. Not because of your father, because of history. He's got to be history.
Yeah.
But why is that?
Well, his theory was because he wasn't a politician. He was very quiet. He was, you know, he just did his thing. You know, he throughout the years, you know, certain right, like Jimmy Breslin always used to write about him. So he was known, but he wasn't flashy. He was very like a, you know, he had his he would wear, never tie his tie. It would be always crossed over. And he was never a politician. It's like even on sit downs, like I told you the story when I got in trouble with the West Side. Like even at the sit down, he would just like got up and he told John Gotti, listen, you be a politician. He goes, I'm a gangster. I'm not a politician. So he wasn't flashy. He didn't, you know, he just wasn't running around the city being flashy. He was always sat low key, but he was very serious.
Well, he was an old school gangster. I mean,
old school. He didn't like when he heard that John Gotti used to sign autographs, like he just couldn't like believe that was going on. Like he was in shock. Like, what do you mean he's signing autographs? I said, yeah, I was in a restaurant with him having lunch, me, Tim, Tony Lee and Joe Watts. And this couple walked up to him and asked him for his autograph and he gave them his autograph. My father said, what is he kidding? He gave somebody his, you know, like he just couldn't fathom them like that was going on. Like, so, you know, he was just, he was what he was. He was a gangster. He was a gangster's gangster.
That's hey, cool. Hey, Anthony, I want to ask you something. Any Gambino guy that somebody now, who they come up under? Anybody.
What do you mean?
Like, as far as all these Carrazos and all these guys.
Well, they will come up under my father. My father came up under Charlie Wagner. And then when he got straightened out, he started his own crew. When I got into the life, when I was a teenager, my father had one of the biggest crews in the city. At one point, even John was with my father. When they were kids, Nicky, Carrazza, John Gotti, all of them were one crew. when they were teenagers. And then there was a conflict between Nikki Carrazza and John Gotti because, you know, their personalities. So they had some friction. And my father, he happened to really love Nikki Carrazza. So he sided with Nikki. So Nikki went with my father and John winded up going with Charlie Wagner. And then there was sort of beefs in between Nikki and JoJo coming up in the 50s and early 60s. There was a lot of friction. And my father always sided with Nikki, who was with him. Nikki Carrazza, JoJo, Lenny DiMaria. And all these guys later on in life became big, you know, big wise guys, big millionaires. You know, they got big positions throughout the years.
Nikki was an all-time gangster. Nikki was a gangster.
Yeah, Nikki was
talking about bringing up gangs. Nikki was a gangster. JoJo was another guy, a politician. Yeah. Wasn't no gangster. He was a money guy. No. But tell me a story. What happened with Nikki and John Gotti Senior? Something happened with the father. It was a little bit of a fight or something.
Matter of fact, I just got some bad news too. I just heard that Anthony Carrazza passed away. I don't know if he's aware of that. I just got
The twins.
Yeah, Anthony. I just got a call yesterday. Anthony Carrazza passed away, who was Nikki's kid brother, Blaze Carrazza's twin. Right. So what happened was, him and Blaze opened up an after hour club on Fulton Street, on top of a car wash. And John went up there with a few guys and started trouble. And they called up, my father was at this bar he owned on Eastern Parkway called the Back Page. And my father went over there with Nikki and a few guys and they started beefing. And Nikki was hitting John on the head with a phone receiver. And John jumped out the window. He thought he was going to get killed. So they had a big sit down.
Well, I mean, on John's behalf, you can't blame him because Nikki was a tough guy. I don't use that word for a lot of these guys.
And there was a lot of guys that when my father rolled in, you know, and John was at that point very outnumbered. So he thought he was going to get killed and he jumped out the window. And then they had a sit down with Charlie and everything got squashed. But throughout the years, they always had beefs like they hit Freddie DiCongiglio on the head with a hammer. And Freddie shot Angelo Quack's brother in the face. There was always conflicts between my father's guys and John's guys. But eventually, they got tight. Like, when John became the boss, he would make Nikki meet him, like, 2 o'clock in the morning in alleyways and driveways. And Nikki thought, you know, Nikki went. You know, Nikki was a man. You know, Nikki went knowing he might get killed. But John was just failing him out. And when he always kept on showing up, John, you know, gave him his props, you know what I mean? So everything got squashed. But throughout the years, later on, John got really tight with my father, and he was always good to me, like I told you. You know, he was, throughout the years, one of the Gottis that was good to me, him. The rest of them, that's another story. But he was good to me. And, you know,
let me ask you a question. John Senior, I know you liked, and there was a lot of good qualities about him. And he was a tough guy. I mean, let's not take it away from him. But what's your feelings on, you know, Pete Gotti? And I know that I spoke up for Pete, and I think that you had a story about Pete Gotti also.
I remember that one. I know that one.
Pete was a sanitation worker. Mm-hmm. Pete was in a spot that he had no business being in. Pete became a captain because there's a story behind that. John, originally, when Jeannie went to jail, John wanted to make Tony Lee a captain, who was my father's partner, and Tony Lee turned it down, and John got very mad at Tony Lee. Matter of fact, John turned around and told me one day, do you believe this guy don't want to be a captain? How dare him? John was really upset about it, and he asked Tony Lee, well, if I don't give it to you, who am I supposed to give it to? And Tony Lee said, what about your brother Pete? And that's how Pete became a captain.
Right.
Because Tony Lee passed, because he wasn't feeling well. Tony Lee, he had stomach cancer. We didn't know at the time, but that was, you know, he was getting issues and he wasn't saying anything about it. So he didn't want to, he didn't have the energy to do that. And he knew John, with John, you know, you were on call 24 hours a day. So that's how Pete got, you know, wind up getting it. But Pete was never a tough guy. You know, I'll give you one, for instance, when I was away at the time, and my father was away, but my father had come home right before my father came home, about maybe 3 weeks, a month before my father got home. My sister, Francine, had a car accident in Ozone Park. She crashed into a limousine. The limousine company wind up being around Pete. So my father called up Mikey Gall, who was a wise guy, who was Tony Lee's brother, who was my brother's partner at the time, and told Mikey my daughter had an accident. And Mikey said, yeah, I know all about it. Me and Pete took care of it. Me and Pete Gotti took care of it. So my father goes, oh, good, thanks. No problem. So now my father gets out of prison, and my father's in my backyard on 88th Street. And Mikey comes walking in the backyard, and my father says to Mikey, what are you doing here? You know, you're on my restrict list. What do you want to get me violated? So Mikey goes, oh, I had to come. Pete sent me. So my father goes, what does he want? Now, at this time, Pete's the official boss of the family because nobody else wanted it. So they gave it to Pete, you know. So he's the boss of the family. And my father goes, what does he want from me? And Mikey hands my father an invoice. And my father looks at the invoice, and it's for $2,800. My father goes, what's this for? He goes, well, it's for the car accident your daughter got into. Pete wants the $2,800. My father goes, Pete wants the $2,800. You told me you took care of it. What do you mean he wants the $2,800? He goes, does he know I just got out of jail? Because you don't do that to people like guys that got out of the joint. You know? So my father tells Mikey, here's the invoice. This is what you do. Go back to Pete. Give it to Pete. Tell Pete if he wants the $2,800 to meet me on any street corner he wants to meet me on, and I'll be there. But tell him to come by himself, and I'll pay him the $2,800. Nothing was said. So Mikey goes, what are you kidding me? He goes, no, tell him exactly what I told you. So Mikey went back and told him. Nothing happened. 18 months later, I'm telling you, 18 months later, my father, may rest in peace, he dies. I'm in the joint. I'm in Schuylkill doing a bit, right? I get a visit from this kid, Richie, that worked for me. Comes up. He's a nervous wreck. He goes, oh, my God, I don't know what to do. I said, what's the matter? He goes, Pete Gotti sent for me. He told me that your father owed him $2,800. He wants you to pay him. He wants me to give him money every week out of the vending company. I said, $2,800? My father owes him $2,800. Are you kidding me? He shook me down for the $2,800. 18 months after my father died. That's a gangster.
Yeah.
Why don't you take it off my father?
Yeah.
But now I go back I go back onto the compound, and there's all wise guys there, Frankie Bones, Bawad, all these big wise guys, and they couldn't believe it. When I told them what happened, they were like, what? So and then I go to the phone, I call up Freddie DiCongelio, Freddie Hot, who was a wise guy, and I call him up and I go, Freddie, what's going on? This guy's shaking me down for 20 years. Does he know I'm in jail? He says, oh, well, I don't know what to tell you. He's doing that to everybody. So he didn't even understand the life. Like, you don't do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, my father, you didn't want to go get the money off him. Because why? Because you would have had to kill him. Well, I had a beef one time. I went to Pete Gotti and I told Pete, listen, if this kid goes on my route again, I'm going to kill him. You know what he did, Pete? He went like this. He covered his ears and he went, oh, don't. I don't want to hear things like that. He covered his ears.
Well, let me intervene and tell you something. And you know this, Anthony, because you were a guy that was getting straightened out. So people that don't know, you were getting straightened out actually on a couple of occasions. You kept getting locked up. Yeah. And the list was handed in. You were on the list. And, you know, we know the story because, you know, obviously the people that don't know, the list goes around and gets an approval, and you got locked up. But, you know, for the people that don't know Pete Gotti, and that's why I said I like Pete, actually. He's a harmless guy, but he didn't understand the life. He's a legitimate guy that should have never been straightened out. We know that. For the people that don't know out there, the stories like that, you know, they resonate to different street guys because they understand what you're saying. But they also, and a lot of times when I'm, you know, now obviously we're doing the show, and Gene, had somebody made a comment about Gene, could be a one-time wonder. I don't think they realize that you guys are three generations of royalty from the mafia. I understand because I grew up around your family. I grew up on your father's lap playing baseball and different things. And so I know him since we're kids. We all know. And, you know, we had a different respect for him back then as a young kid because he was such a nice guy to us. He was really a humble guy, like a grandpa figure to us as little kids, really. And on the other hand, he could be a gangster, tough guy for the people that did know him in that life. And guys like you mentioned, Joe Watts, who's a serious German, obviously serious killer for the people who don't know. Big earner, tough guy out of Staten Island. And so when they talk about Gene, you know, obviously growing up in the house as a little kid and you've seen stories and heard stories and talked to people. You know, what's your comeback when someone's saying something about you? I mean, because people are talking about you. And, you know,
right.
Obviously.
Well, I mean, I'm expecting that. You know, I mean, I'm expecting them to talk crap, but they really didn't know my background and my heritage and who I was related to. And like I said, always growing up, you know, Anthony was always in and out of jail. You know, he was always a real stand-up guy, a good person, and his father was the guy. You know, what I mean, whoever didn't know that, Fat Andy was, to me, to everybody, was a mafia legend. And I have to say, compared to a lot of these other guys that call themselves capital regimes and all this crap, and you know, never really earned their way in that life. You know, like for one instance, I want to read something for you, Anthony. For this, I want to just read this. This is coming from, I want to read this out. Under cross-examination by Mr. Walters, attorney Robert Gold, who tried to challenge Mr. Francis's credibility, Mr. Francis admitted that he became a federal informant in February of 1986 and that his sentencing in connection with the charges for which he pled guilty was upon his cooperation with the government in several investigations. He stated that he had informed the government of meetings in which Carmine Persico, the top leader of the New York Five Organized Crime Families, discussed talking measures against federal agents. Mr. Francis admitted to Mr. Gold that he lied at a federal detention hearing and also lied in the deposition given to the government in April of 1986. When he did not mention his holdings in Mr. Walters' sports agency at the time, being a member of organized crime family did not allow me to tell the truth, he explained. The trial will resume. That's all I want to say. As far as you know, you might know more about me than Anthony. To explain Michael Francis and what he was back in the day.
When I think of Mikey Francis, he was always a money guy. I mean, you know, the best way I could explain it is that he wasn't even a criminal. Guys like that, they're not even criminals. I mean, they're money guys. Yeah. Were they doing illegal things? Yeah. But like I could, I'll compare myself. My father was a wise guy. His father was a wise guy. Well, his stepfather was a wise guy because his real father wasn't. His real father is not Sonny.
Right.
It's Chubby.
Chubby, right. Right. Chubby, which he never really talks about, which I don't understand why, because, the, you know, from what I understand through my mother and through the family, like he was the real father wasn't allowed to see him. Sonny wouldn't let his real father see him. And he used to have to hide by the school and watch the kid play in the schoolyard. You know, these are stories that my father told me and my mother, because they were very close. My parents were very close with his parents at the time. Matter of fact, my mother just was telling me stories about his mother yesterday, because they were pretty tight. He was, when I think of him, he was always money. You know, I used to run into him here and there. He used to come to my father's gold store to see Tony Lee. He was doing some stuff with Tony Lee. But the difference between him and I was, even though I was Fat Andy's son, I was in the trenches. Like I worked in crap games. He never worked in crap games. I worked in number offices. He never worked in number offices. I took sports. I Shylock. I stole. I banged out credit cards. You know what I mean? Like,
I'll finish for you. I'm gonna finish this for people that don't know you. Hmm. You assaulted people. You fought. You right. built. You exactly. did everything a gangster. And here's the difference that I speak highly of your family, and you know this about yourself, your brother Albert. You guys were legitimately nice guys. I think because of your father, you guys weren't. You weren't the typical mob guys, kids or nephews or anything. Like, you guys earn your way. And right. you earn your way because your father made you grow up that way. And exactly. your father also taught you to be gentlemen at the same time. So exactly. when people ask me, why do I advocate like this? Because I've been a little kid around your house. You right. know as well as I do, your brother was my coach. Your father was at all yeah. our games. We went to the Lost Battalion Hall together. We boxed. Your mm-hmm. father wanted a couple of things out of us as kids and your sons. He wanted us to be humble. He wanted us to be gentlemen, but he wanted us also to be old school gangsters. Right, and if right. we didn't fulfill that, you know as well as I do, your father would be the first guy to give you an ass kick and exactly. not somebody else. So you, know, you had respect towards that type of lifestyle. The guys that aren't, and you know, the Pete Gottis, who I happen to think was a nice guy, but just what you said, he wasn't a gangster. Either was Michael Francis. And you know, you could tell it better than anybody, really, because that's your generation.
You know, it was a whole different ball game back then. You know, my father came up in the 50s when Albert Anastasia was the boss. You know, you had and then the 60s with Carl. And when I came up in the 70s, late 60s and early 70s, it was a different game than it is today. Like when I got thrown out of school, you know, did I get perks because my father was Fat Andy, and did I get a pass on some things? Most definitely. I definitely did. But I was still in the trenches. Like my father, when I quit school and I told my father I wanted to go to work for him, you know, he put me to work the next day in a blackjack game. You know, like I went to jail. I've been in and out of jail since 1978. You know, I have for writing, for bookmaking, for numbers, you know, for policy, because I was in the street. I, you know, when I woke up in the morning, and I'm not saying that I'm not trying to glorify it, because now when I look back at it, I was wrong, because, you know, the way of life that I believed in back then, the way of life my father believed in the mafia with all his being, like with all his might. I mean, that was him. That's who he was. That was what he believed in. And he believed that his way of life was the right way. And he used to tell me the public deserves every screwing they get. He believed that because of the way they voted and the way they lived. Like, he just didn't believe in it. And I followed suit. But you know what? But now today, when I think back at it, you know, fathers shouldn't send their sons to kill people. You know, so but that's who he was.
Well, Anthony, here's a lesson learned. Yeah. And this is the other side of the mob that we talk. And that's why I bring politics in with it also, because we were on the street. We grew up in a mob. We go around the mob. So we know what Machiavelli is. And we know when a government, and I'm talking about the Democrats, are trying to give something away with the right hand and take it with the left. Mm-hmm. We understand the con. They're looking for big government. They want to control things. And yeah. This is why I like the conservative sides, because they believe in opening up your own business, become successful, don't depend on anybody. Anytime you depend on somebody, they're taking something from you and your freedoms. And their aim is to manipulate the minorities. Figure, let's give them some pennies. That's all they're worth. That's mm-hmm. what they say. But all they right. say it in a different way. They're like, they're looking out for them. But meanwhile, they're trying to suppress them and keep them down. And they want to stand on top of the mountain. This is why I don't really particularly care for a Biden or a Pelosi, because they're con artists. But to get back to the mob world, I think that you understand what it was to grow up in it. And then you see the treachery of guys that would get on their knees for your father. But when things went south, you've seen all the friends and all the maid guys and all the anybody, where were they to be at that time? Then everybody abandoned it. And this is the message we're giving kids.
Exactly.
This is not what it all cracks up to see what it is.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because when I was a kid, when I got suspended from school, I was 16, 1969. The mob, we were princes. It was the life that I was leading was amazing. I was hanging out with the biggest celebrities in the world. I mean, Frank Sinatra used to invite my father to sit at his table in Chili's. Like, Frank Sinatra, you know, you would come to my house and Frankie Valli would be sitting there having dinner. Jay Black, Louis Prima, they used to come to my house. Well, it was amazing, you know, like, never waited online. The Copa, like in the movie Goodfellas. I used to get into the Copa when I was 17, the same way that he got in the movie, through the basement, up through the kitchen. It was amazing. Like, what, you know, it was, you just felt like you were just filled up. When my father tried to get me not to be in the life. So what he did, which backfired on him, because I'll tell you a quick story. So when he put me to work, he took me out with him one night. He says, come on, I want you to come with me. We went to Brooklyn, and we went to this bar called the 5 o'clock Lounge. It was in Brooklyn on like Church Avenue. We walked in, it was a Friday night. The bar was packed. I mean, it was packed with people. We walked in, we walked up to the bar. The bartender said, hey, Andy, what's going on? My father introduced me to him. We got two drinks. We're drinking at the bar. And all of a sudden, people started leaving, walking. Hey, Andy, how are you? Boom. Hey, Andy, boom. About an hour later, the bar's like empty. So my father turns around and he looks at me and he goes, you see the bar? When we first walked in, it was really crowded, right? I said, yeah. He goes, you see how empty it is now? You know why it's empty? I said, no, why? He goes, because I'm here. I said, because you're here. I said, what are you talking about? Because you're here. Because these people don't know if I'm here to kill somebody, smack somebody, rob somebody. So they left. He said, that's how you want to live? I was blown away. I loved it. I was like, oh my God, yeah, that's how I want. I was like, I was blown away. Like, I, my ego was like, boom. Like, so he sort of wanted to turn me off to it, but it backfired him because to me, it was the greatest thing since apple pie. Like, what? Definitely, I want, you know what I mean? I want that respect too. What are you kidding? He said, that's how you want to live. You want people to fear you? And, you know, and like you said, he was quiet. He wasn't a violent guy. He wasn't a bully. Like some wise guys are bullies. You know, yeah. You know, he wasn't a bully. He'd give you the shirt off his back, but he'd kill you in a heartbeat. I mean, you know, he was a murderer. I mean, there's no other way to put it, you know, and everybody knew it and he got respect. Like he got straightened out in 1953. I mean, a lot of you'll understand and Gene will understand. He got straightened out in 1953. The books were closed.
Right.
Right now. And the reason why he got straightened out with the books closed is because he was what they considered a special case because he went on what they called at that time suicide missions for Albert Anastasia. And what I mean by suicide missions was like maybe committing a murder during the day. Like they clipped a guy in a florist. It was in broad daylight. In Brooklyn. So he did these things. And you got to understand, now we're talking about a 24, 25-year-old kid. We're not talking about, you know, we're talking about a young man like Gene's age, right. Younger than Gene, you know. So he was a special case. So he got straightened out in 1953. And other families try to have it stopped because of his violence he perpetrated before he got hooked up with Charlie. He was robbing crap games and he was robbing poker games, which was back then a death sentence.
Yeah, and he robbed Charlie's game, if I remember correctly.
That's how he winded up with Charlie. He robbed Charlie's game, and Charlie sent for Albert Maione, who was Happy Maione, who was in Murders Incorporated's brother, and asked Albert Maione, who's kid Andy that's running around robbing all these poker games? And my uncle, my father's oldest brother was called Liberty. That was his nickname, but his real name was Frank. But everybody in the neighborhood called him Liberty. And Albert Maione told Charlie, that's Liberty's kid brother, Andy. So he goes, Andy. So he told Albert, you think you could get the money back? And Albert said, there's only two things you could do with this kid. Either kill him or give him a job. He said, because he's not giving you back the money. You can forget it. So Charlie told Albert to bring him in to talk to Charlie. So my father went with Tony Lee, loaded up. He went, he made Tony Lee wait outside. He went in by himself and he met Charlie and he wound up becoming Charlie's driver. Charlie fell in love with him. He started driving Charlie around and Charlie had nobody with him back then. He didn't have all these guys with him. He was just had his brother Danny with him, you know, in East New York. Charlie was originally a tattoo artist. Yeah, not many people know that. You know that?
Yeah. You know what's funny about these stories, and I don't mean to cut you off about your father. I probably know 100 of them from people that were around, and I mean tough guys, and some from your father as a kid, you know, even telling stories and this and that. But one, when I was in Brooklyn Avenue U at Willie Boy's place, and you know this story also, but not too many people obviously know it. And Willie Boy Johnson says to me before he goes bad, he's got his senior's partner, and I'm, you know, on a half sheet with them. And I go sit with Willie Boy, and he's talking, and I'm talking about, I think I was talking about Albert at the time, your brother. And the subject comes up and says, look at me. He looked at me, kid. He never called me Johnny. He says, look at me, kid. And he points to his head and he says, see that? And I know. Feel that. And I'm feeling it. You know, I don't know what the fuck he's going to say, what he's going to say. Excuse me, I shouldn't curse. And he says, feel that. And I feel it. Yeah. He goes, you know who did that? One of the toughest guys ever, probably ever in the mob world. He says, Andy Ruggiano, your guy. And I started smiling, and he goes, oh, you're proud of that? I said, no, I'm not proud that he shot you in the head. He goes, well, I'm telling you firsthand. This guy was one of the toughest guys, but I got to say, he was one of the fairest, nicest guys. Yeah. So, you know, you hear these stories all the time, and then I hear, you know, people with Gene, because it's in his genes. You know, people say to me, why is he so wild? Why is he doing those scores? Well, you know, your blood is his blood and your father's blood. So I look at a guy like Gene, and I say, listen, but, you know, we joke about it now, but the message is always going to be the same to us. Through all this, and a lot of it was romance with us, glamorized. Yeah. You know, we joke about it. We still get laughs at it. But that's not really the end game with the kids is, well, that's just the good part. Now we can tell you 95% of the bad part.
Right.
And, you know, and really, that's the 95% of, you know, some of these stories of what happened to your family when your father took a downfall and you went to prison and your brother had issues. Where was everybody?
I remember when I was a kid, when your father passed away, I was in the funeral parlor. And I remember they were discussing your father's stuff. They were talking about who was going to get what. And your brother Albert didn't take too nice to that. And I remember Skinny Dom getting cracked in the head. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I was away. Yeah, they wouldn't let me come to his funeral. But Gene, you know, Gene has got the blood. You know, Gene's grandfather, my uncle, my favorite Uncle Junior, that used to say, nephew, I miss my Uncle Junior. You know, he was always around. My father loved him. He was a little, you know, he's got him out of a lot of trouble throughout the years.
Oh, my God.
My uncle. But, you know, Gene was, in the house all the time, you know. And Gene, like me, probably thought it was the greatest thing in the world, you know, to be in that life, which I did, you know. But you're right. So what happened was, my father, he helped everybody. He saved people's lives like Frankie, years ago, they stabbed the wise guy's brother, Nikki, Lenny, JoJo. They were supposed to get killed. My father went on sit-downs in basement. He literally saved their lives. Like, he put his own life on the line for people. He gave people everything. But it changed from back when he was straightened out in the 50s, 60s, 70s. They had honor. They had morals. They had, you know, they believed in something. The guys around when the time my father died, they couldn't find gold in a gold mine. Skinny Dom don't even know how to read and write. He couldn't find gold in a gold mine. The only way he can make money is by taking money off people. When my father died, Carl Amato, he just had passed away. He was no
Carl. Yeah, yeah, I know Carl. Right, he was a kid.
My father died. My father's body, his body was still in Jamaica Hospital in the freezer. He wasn't even in the funeral parlor yet. And Skinny Dom and Freddie and Mikey, who were supposed to be my father's best friends, started sending for guys. And my father's body wasn't even in the funeral parlor yet. They were sending for guys to tell them to bring Andy's money to them.
Yeah. Incredible. It's incredible some of the things
that
are going on.
Right. My Alice, my guys used to bring me money for my son's health insurance and my commissary. They made the guy stop bringing the money to Alice and bring it to them. She went there and fought with them. They took, when I was away, they took everything. They took everything. They took all my father's businesses. They left me with a couple of vending locations just to appease me. They took everything. They shook me down. Pete shook me down for $2,800. It was horrible. It was just so disrespectful. And when I got out, I went to see Ciro Perone, and he was told that he couldn't help me because he couldn't get involved. So Nikki wind up stepping in. Nikki Carrazza wind up stepping in, and he got me transferred from Mikey Gal, who I was with at the time, to him, and he proposed me again. That's what I got proposed. And they took everything. So I had to start over. I went to work for my father. I had to start over because they took all my father's legal businesses. They took all my father's guys. And my mother had to get Meals on Wheels. My mother got no money whatsoever from anybody. It was just a bad situation. It turned into a bad situation. And I told them that if the shoe was on the other foot, they knew in their hearts my father would have never done that. So when my father got out of prison, they had shut out Tony Lee's wife, Helen, because Mikey Gal robbed all the money. And when my father got out, Helen went to see him, and he put Helen back on the payroll, Tony Lee's wife, because he tried to rectify some of the stuff they did against Tony Lee when he was away. But when he died, Tony Lee was already dead, so I couldn't rectify anything because I had no power at the time. So I just had to sit back and take it or fight an army at the time. So, this was a bad situation. And what happened was then when I got out, Nikki had got me transferred to him, which was fine, you know, and they passed my name around, and I went to see Lenny DeMaria, and he told me, listen, everything's okay, consider yourself made, you're a wise guy, you can go on sit downs, everybody knows, you're everybody's equal, we just haven't had the ceremony yet, we're going to probably have the ceremony around Christmas, but you know, if you need to go on a sit down, you could go by yourself, and he gave me the whole schmeal, and I said, all right, I went home, and about a week later, I got arrested on the case, on the murder case, I got arrested for a murder that happened 20 years before that. I got arrested, and nobody helped me. You know, I had no money to pay for my attorneys. These were people that I did that I committed crimes with. You know, nobody wanted to help me. I sent messages to people to help me with money. Jojo Carrazza, who my father saved his life, sent me back a message that you made your own bed. Now you got to sleep in it. And all I needed was like a stinking $25,000 to give to my lawyer.
You know what's funny?
They had a fundraiser,
and nobody gave, and nobody gave sent money. The only ones who sent money were Georgie Russo, a couple of other guys. Frankie Russo sent me a big $500. He's a millionaire. I know him since he's a little kid. My father saved his life when Banky wanted to kill him. A few guys. I winded up at the Georgie had it at Villa Russo. He did it on his own. I wind up getting about that night. I wind up getting maybe about 4,000. I needed 25. I got about 4,000 or 5,000. I got, and that was it. You know, me personally, if I would have committed the type of crimes that I committed with these guys, and you asked me for money, I'm gonna beg, borrow, and steal to help you.
Right.
So the whole life that I honored and loved and adored when I was younger, the whole life did an about face. Now it's these guys, nobody respects you. Nobody respected my father. Like, he was dead. F him. You know, it was just a whole different ball game. And even when like you brought up Mikey, that thing you read, you know, Mikey cooperated.
Right.
You know, he could say whatever he wants. He profited. The only difference is he didn't testify. He didn't go, you know, he didn't have to testify in any trials. He cooperated. Yeah.
Right.
You know, listen, they could call me names, you know, but the bottom line is nobody was around that looked out for me. Nobody was around who I loved. It was a lawyer, which I won't mention the name of the attorney, a lawyer. When I got arrested on this case, a lawyer that was involved in the case called me up. A lawyer, see, that they forgot the people. They forgot that some people truly did love my father, and some people truly did care about me and care about what happened to me, Andy's son. You know, some people were our friends before they were their friends. They forgot all that. This attorney called me. A reputable attorney that was a big mob lawyer called me and told me, listen, I'm going to tell you something now. Call the government, because these people are going to throw you under the bus.
Well, yeah, here's the thing, and you know, you're telling me stories, and I talk, you know, about Gene being, yeah. And here's the thing, Gene's a throwback of the old guy.
Officers.
It's not the new generation of gangsters don't do anything. They're not the generation of where your father started out, where they were tough guys and they were nice guys and they weren't insecure guys. The guys now, you know, these guys couldn't, they would never be straightened out back in the day. This is a different era of guys that are useless. They never do anything. And Gene was a different type. So Gene stayed as a throwback, doing the, maybe because, like I said, because it was in the blood from family lines or whatever, it was three generations. But most of these guys, and you mentioned Jojo. Jojo Carrazza, guys that, you're not going to expect anything from him. His best friend was Mikey Monk. He wouldn't give him 2 cents. He let him die like a dog. You remember Mikey. And when Jojo was in Butterfingers and Frankie Geeky came looking for him for a machine gun, he what did he do? He made a phone call to Ronnie and they begged me to get me to go look for Frankie Geeky for him, to go kill Frankie Geeky for him, which, you know, obviously that was one of the murders that I was involved in the conspiracy of. But, you know, these guys aren't capable of it. These guys are good at doing one thing, taking down the money, not doing any kind of work, and bullshitting the public into thinking something if they wear a suit and tie.
Listen, you were a criminal. Gene was a criminal. I was a criminal. You know, we lived the life. You know, nobody brought me money. You know, when I took over a vending company on my own, I went into the street. I took over the whole company. Nobody helped me. One kid helped me. This kid, Christoph, helped me. I sat down with the West Side, with the Chins crew. I won the argument. I took over this whole vending company. After I did all the work, all the running around in the streets, threatening, arguing, sit downs, I get sent for, Pete and Skinny Dom sent for me and tell me, now that you got this vending company, you know, you got to start bringing us an envelope every week. I said, I got to bring you an envelope every week. I said, this is what you need to do. I told Skinny Dom. I said, my father's in Allenwood. I said, this is what you need to do. Get in your car. There's two things you could do. Either go to Allenwood and ask my father how much money I should give you every month. Right? I said, you could do that. And whatever my father tells you, that's what I'll give you. Or tomorrow morning, meet me tomorrow morning, spend the day with me. Let's go to all the ghetto, all the, because all my spots are in the hood. Jamaica, you know, Rastafarians, Dominicans, you know, all the hot spots in the hood. I said, tomorrow you come with me to all these after hour joints and all these number spots. And whatever money I get at the end of the day, I'll give you half. But whatever beefs I have, you got to help me. And then I'll give you half. He called me a scumbag.
Yeah.
So because I don't want to give you an envelope, I'm a scumbag.
Yeah. Well, listen, he was a coffee. He was a listen. I remember back in the day, he was a coffee boy for your father. Back
that's exactly what I was saying.
Yeah, he's not an.
And that's why they talk about
Skinny Dom.
See, you know? And that's why they talk about guys like Gene. They talk about guys like you and guys like me. Is because in their belly they know that we're men. You know, they're in their belly, they know we lived the life. They, you know, they didn't. Like John Jr., one day he was in military school. The next day I was at a party where he got straightened out. Like, how the hell did he was in military school last year with his little, you know, uniform on. Taking that attention. Now all of a sudden he's a wise guy.
Didn't your brother go after him one time?
My brother used to call him a little monkey. I'll knock, get out of here. I'll knock you out, he told. Used to tell him. My brother, they used to tremble when my brother was in another world. He told John Gotti, come on, throw a punch at me. I'll knock you right out, he told him one night.
Tony Pep was there.
I got really close to Vinny and Sarah, and he really loved your father. He used to talk so, and I don't hear him talk hardly about nobody. He always bashes everybody.
Yeah.
He used to say your father was the guy.
Yeah, my father. They brought my father to Lutunza Jewelry after they did Lutunza. Right. They went after they did Lutunza, which he got found not guilty for, but he did it. After they did Lutunza, they brought the stuff to his cousin's house, and then they went to Cafe Liberty and they drank till the next day to party. Well, my father was waiting for them in Cafe Liberty. They went Tommy DeSimone, all of them went to Cafe Liberty. They loved my father. They brought Jimmy Burke and Vinny brought my father all the jewelry. My father fenced a lot of that jewelry with Tony Lee from Lutonza. Wow.
Yeah.
You know, when my father died, I have the article in my bedroom. The week my father died, Jimmy Breslin wrote a big article about my father, about how he died of a broken heart, of a loneliness. He said he died of loneliness. And he wrote a whole article about my father. He always used to write about my father. And my father used to run into him on Queens Boulevard and used to abuse him, but he used to laugh, Jimmy. And you know, who was a bigger news reporter than Jimmy Breslin, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, I've been in the house and I seen some pictures of your father and Sonny Black. A lot of guys been asking me questions about them, and you know, I can't elaborate on, but I know it's your time. Can you elaborate a little bit about those guys, Sonny Black, and the relationship with your father and all of them?
Sonny Black, my father was very close with all of them. Yeah, my father. Matter of fact, Robin Angle and them, they when they got in trouble for a murder case years ago, Little Joe the Donor, my father's godson, and Robin, they went on the lam. They hid them out. Sonny Black and all.
Hey, Joey was a good guy too. The Don.
Joey, he was good. He was a good kid. He was a man, you know. He was dangerous.
He was there when I shot TT in the head, actually.
Yeah.
His friend, he actually lived after I shot him there. But Joe was there, Dorn. He goes, hey, fight him fair first.
Yeah,
you know, we fought, and I shot him in the head. Joe looked at me. He goes, well, at least you gave him a fair fight first.
Yeah, yeah.
And he ended up living, actually. And I got friendly with him, believe it or not, a couple of years later.
Yeah,
but, Joe. Joseph were street guys. I mean, these guys.
And I want to explain to everybody. They don't understand your era and Johnny's era and our era. Your era, your two eras, much different than mine. You know what I mean? There's a lot more murder and real mafia. So a lot of the guys ask me these questions, and I know you could elaborate on it and explain to them more about Lefty Guns and all these guys, because that was your father's people. You know?
That was my father. That was my father's generation. You know, it was a different world than it is today. You know, there was so many more ways back then to make money. Like, there was crap games. Like, and if you had a crap game, the whole neighborhood worked in the crap game. You had people in the crap game, dealers, doormen, stickmen, sandwich guys. You had chauffeurs. You had a depot with a dispatcher. You had chauffeurs, you had luggage, people bringing people into the... So you had one Kropotkin before the casinos in Atlantic City. You had one... And every family had a piece, like the Lucchese's with Shylock the money. The West Side was the bankers. The Gambinos were the dealers and the stick men. So and all the families had a piece. And every crap game had a time slot. Like my father's crap game was 1 to 3. Paul Vario's crap game was 8 to 11. Everybody had a time slot. It was and the whole neighborhood worked in crap games. Number businesses. The whole neighborhood took numbers. People, old ladies in the houses took numbers. It was a different world than it is today. Today, what are you going to do? Sell drugs? Everybody's. What else is there to do today?
Well, you know, Gene, part of back then, and actually, Anthony, I told you the other day, somebody wrote me on a website, and it was the Grecos, who was one of their sons, the nephew of Bobby. And, you know, the Grecos hung around your family since they're kids. They were jockeys. And Bobby was a good ball player, actually played with me and with your brother. And we used to heist, Kennedy Airport in those days. We used to get a lot of trucks. Bobby had a good hook there, really. We get the 18 wheelers and we'd pull up with the manifest and mostly give up. So, you know, we worked an angle. Sometimes we'd hijack them straight. But, you know, it was different angles of making money. You're right, back then. It was, and Kennedy was a flea market for us.
Yeah, you know, that was it. Yeah, when I was a kid in Ozone Park, everybody either worked at Aqueduct Racetrack or in Kennedy Airport.
Yeah. Well, that's where you knew my father from the track.
Yeah, your father was in the track every day with us. Your father was in the track every day. Every day. You could go find him every day. He used to come a little late in the day.
He liked to sleep.
But he was there every day. His grandfather was there every day. His grandfather, my Uncle Junior, was there every day.
He lived there. My God, he lived in there.
I got his grandfather a job in an after-hour joint. He told me it was the greatest job he ever had. He used to go to the after-hour joint 4 in the morning, work there till 9, 10, get his pay, and go right to the racetrack. It was the greatest job ever.
And I want to back up on something you said earlier. Anthony, you brought up Robert Engel's name earlier.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the people that don't know who Robert is, Robert was a legitimate, serious, tough guy in our neighborhood. And, you know, Gene, you know, we talk about Robert a lot and talk about guys that were wild guys, shooters. And
right.
He legitimate. I want to go back to Michael Francis because I didn't like some of the comments that were made. And to us, because we were very personal friends and Anthony's very personal friends with Robert, he was a legitimate. But when he changed his life, and he's really a man of faith. He believes in what he's doing, just like you do some good things for kids, Ant. And, you know, and the message I want to go back is, and we're going to bring Robin on also to talk about his faith, religion, his belief, Christianity belief, and, you know, some of the stories of the mob, we're going to talk about. But we're going to talk about moving forward out of the mob and how all of us are trying to do the right thing for kids not to follow some of these things. We laugh about it, we joke about it, we know it's a negative life for kids.
Without a doubt.
And Robert, I want to hopefully bring him on and talk about some of these stories you're talking about and some of the wise guys in the past, guys that can relate to Gene and some of the stories we talk about. And Robert was a serious, get-down, vicious guy. I don't talk and give too many guys props when it comes to that. And one of the guys I really like, and whenever, you know, a guy that spoke highly of your father also, and I'm going to mention him because of the neighborhood, some of the things that went on, was Johnny Cornelius. In my opinion, was a tough, tough guy, loved your father, told me some stories about your father, and I wish Johnny was home during all this stuff. Johnny was a fun gangster. I was a guy that boats and bikes and Harleys and traveling and laughing and drinking. He wasn't in the club playing cards all day. And, you know, I'll give the guys that deserve to be known as tough guys and real guys. Johnny's one of them. Nicky Carrazzo's one. But I can't talk about these young generation guys like that. The only guy I ever talked about like that was Gene. And, and guys would give me messages.
Yeah.
So when these fake guys are out there like you're talking about, man, we're never going to respect them. And you know that. There's no respect for these guys.
I don't even think there's a mob anymore. I mean, they're letting things go on that would never go on 30 years ago with these, now they got the TV show on MTV. People would be there'd be bodies all over the streets. Joe Colombo got shot in the head because he started the Italian American League because he went on TV on a talk show. Imagine today, Carl would have, Carl, if Carl was alive, there'd be bodies all over the street. It would never happen, what's going on today, you know. And Robert, yeah, Robert is a perfect example of how you could change your life. You know, Robert, even Mike, you know, getting back to Mikey, how everything, how we all tie in with each other. Mikey Francis had a disco in Long Island, a big, beautiful
disco. Right. Yeah. I used to get an envelope from that, yeah.
Yeah. Robert got pinched out there. Robert got pinched out there years ago. Robin Angle got pinched out there years ago, and Mikey didn't lift a finger to help him.
Yeah, I know.
You know, hey. Robert. You know, me and you know, I talk to Robert all the time. You know, we have a belief now. You know that you know it saved me too. You know, because I'm sitting in Attica and I'm fighting the cockroaches and I'm fighting the mice and I'm sitting in Attica. You know, and it's like, what, you know, what am I doing here? You know, when, you know, and the light went off in my head, like, I can't do this no more. You know, and then when I got out, I went to work. I had my first legitimate, you know, I went to work and then they were going to straighten me out. They were going
to
straighten me out.
I used to come visit you at the tuxedo place, man.
Yeah. When I got out, that's how I was working. I was on parole. I had to work somewhere. You know, and then when I was away, my father died, John Gotti died. You know, if these two men were alive, I might have not have done what I would have definitely not done what I done if my father was alive or John, because first of all, they would have looked out for me. I wouldn't have felt abandoned. I wouldn't have felt disrespected, but they wouldn't allow nobody to disrespect me. When my father came, I'm going to tell you a quick story. When my father came to visit me, when I got sentenced in Miami by the feds, I had to go back to the state because I had state time and fed time. So I was in Elmira. My father came to visit me in Elmira with my brother and this guy, Charlie. They came to visit me, and we're in the visiting room. My father was in the process. My father was good friends with guys in Philly, with Joey Molina. He was the boss of Philadelphia. And this guy, Billy, my father became very tight with them in jail. They were in jail together, and they became very tight. And they were in the produce business. So my father was in the process of opening up a produce supermarket. So he comes up to visit me and he goes, listen, I'm opening up this supermarket and it's for you for when you come out. I said, why? What are you talking about? He goes, because the mob is over. I said, why? And he told me for two reasons. He says, because what made us great was everybody feared us and nobody cooperated. He says, and today, the guys around today, nobody fears them and guys are cooperating.
Well, you know, they lost the idea, and to that is everybody lost the idea of structure, right? So once the idea of structure is involved and everybody loses that, you know as well as I do, guys, the Ronnie One Arms opening statement we talked about last week, it's a guy, whether they want to say it or not, it's a rad opening statement. Yeah. He's cooperating. These guys are allocuting to positions in a mob. They're allocuting to...
They were calling Crime Stoppers.
These are all rat move, cooperating moves, whatever they want to say. But I'm going to tell you, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about, you brought up the Philadelphia, Ronnie Turchi, who was killed. He was one of the concierge in the family at one time, was a very dear friend of mine. His son's a friend of mine. And he was, Ronnie was very close with Nikki and Lenny, actually.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about him. Somebody recently talked to me and sent a message about Marty Bosshart that, it was more in Gene's era that was killed. And they said that me and Ronnie took the credit for killing him. That's far from the truth, whoever wrote that. I actually like Marty Bosshart. I know him since he's a baby. He just came out of Attica. He ran into me in the city. And I tried to save his life, actually. I told him not to meet anybody. And he met and he trusted one of his friends, which Gene could tell that story.
And right, he trusted him, he lured him into, you know, an area, and he got shot in the head by another one of my friends, you know? And,
yeah.
You know, they both got, one got 23 years, one got 21 years.
And the guy that lured him in was no gangster, just another guy.
He was just more like a weed dealer, you know what I mean? And the judge said, you're the biggest wannabe I ever seen in my life.
You got it.
I know him since he was a kid.
Anybody could kill you.
I liked him a lot. I was tight with him. I was at his wedding and everything. You know what I mean? I was real tight with him. But he had a lot of bad things to say about me, him and his family. But that's all right. But, you know, I took care of him, his sister, all of them. And as soon as I went bad, they all were talking bad about me.
Yeah, I want to give it back to full circle on that, Gene, because then Anthony, since you said it, Jojo Carrazzo, he took the weight. Jojo Carrazzo didn't give him a penny. Not a penny while his kid's in jail. So yeah, when he sits there talking, I want the public to understand, a rat is a guy that just set up his best friend, Marty Bosco.
Yeah.
That's all a rat. So I want people to understand when they're calling somebody rat, if he's teaching his kids that way, he's teaching his kids wrong. Because whoever sets up his best friend like that, instead of standing by his best friend, you don't want to kill him. You could have tipped him and said, listen, buddy, I don't know what you're up to. Take off. They're going to hit you. I don't know what you're really doing or not doing. Me, I knew Marty since he was a baby. And I warned him, don't go meet anybody. Take it on the hop. So whoever wrote that message on our last feed, I believe it was on our last feed, our website, you got it wrong. So somebody could talk to his cousin. I met him. And I'm the one that tried to protect him. I'm not the guy that set him up. No. I don't even want to take credit for something like that.
Exactly. You know, as far as cooperating, like you said, you know, I look in the mirror. I could look in the mirror. You know, I don't want to spend the rest of my life in prison. But you know what? There was nobody out there that deserved my respect. I had my father was dead. Everybody I loved was dead.
Well, loyalty deserves loyalty, Anthony.
Exactly right. And I know if my father, I know if there's other certain situations, I wouldn't have went that way. But at that point in time, the lifestyle, I hit a bottom in that lifestyle. I just didn't want to, it just wasn't worth it anymore. You know, like I had knock around guys telling me to cooperate. Like, what are you waiting for? You know, I don't want to disrespect my father. Your father's dead. You did everything for your father. You committed murder for your father. There's nothing else more you could do. He's dead. My sister got arrested with this kid Chris years ago for credit cards and a stolen car. I went to visit my father. My father wanted me to kill the kid. You said to save people, right? That you saved this guy, right? Well, my father wanted to kill this kid. He goes, you know what you got to do with this kid, right? So I looked at him. I go, what are you kidding me? I says, I'm not going to do that. He goes, what are you talking? I said, yeah, we'll kill everybody she goes out with till she meets an astronaut.
They used to call it a black widow. That's
yeah, so he got mad at me. He got up and he goes, I'll take care of it myself. Don't worry about it. So I went back to the neighborhood and I told the kid to run away.
I'm going to give you, if you're going to go about that, how many passes do we give Johnny Burke that your father?
Oh, a million passes.
Contemplated killing him.
A million passes. Yeah.
Yeah, a million.
People could call me names. You know, I know what I did. I did because it was over. It's over. Who's out there?
Well, here's the message now. Right now, your loyalty is to who? The kids that are out there that you're saving.
Exactly.
Right? And the kids that we're sending that message to. And that's where the loyalty belongs.
Exactly. Look at
Gene, with you, Anthony. Robert's doing a hell of a job, actually.
Look at the message we got here. I grew up in the, I was born in 1953. My father was straightened out in 1953. Wise guys changed my diapers. Literally. My whole life, they were in and out of my house. My whole life, I grew up around them, right? And it was great at one point. I'm not going to say I loved it at one point. I loved the life. I lived like a king. I was, you know, I was like a prince. I was like, somebody told me once, we were like the Kennedys.
That's true.
Yeah.
You had the rule of the roof back when you were kids. Anybody that was from my neighborhood knew that.
Yeah.
Anybody from Jamaica Avenue, Ozone Park, Howard Beach, any adjoining neighborhoods, South Jamaica, anywhere.
Right.
You know, any of the kids you remember was a bunch of kids that would hang around the park all
right.
day.
Right, so now there's kids out there that might think the same way I thought. So now my father saved lives. He did work for his family, the Gambino family. He killed people for them. He made money for them. He was out there doing whatever. He gave them his blood, sweat, and tears, right, throughout for 50 years, 60 years, whatever he was alive, straightened out. He did all this stuff for them. And then when he died, his wife had to get Meals on Wheels.
That's horrible.
It's
like me.
Yeah. My mother had no food. She had to get meals because I was gone. I was on the West Coast. I couldn't talk to her. She had to get Meals on Wheels. Nobody even rang her bell to say, Jenny, you need something? Jenny, how are you? Nothing. My father died broke like a dog. John Gotti died like a dog. All these big, where did they die? They died like alone, lonely, in jail. So the life isn't what it seems to be. It's not Hollywood. So the message is that you might see all the bells and whistles, but at the end of the day, take it from guys like me, it's not all bells and whistles. So now what I do now is I work in a field where I help people all day. You know, I help, all my life experience is my education. I don't have a college degree, but I have a job And I have a profession now where I do the work of people that are well educated. I write reports. I do biopsychosocials because of my life experience. So I could sit down with a person like Gene and a young man and try to get him on the right track and tell him, listen, this is how I live. This is what I used to do. I did 14 years in prison. You know, I don't tell them, reveal myself, but I tell them bits and pieces of my life to try to have the light go off. Like, this isn't the way. Being a criminal, drugs, it's over. It's not, it's a losing situation.
Well, when guys, hey, Anthony, Gene, when guys are trying to manipulate, and this is why we're calling them out, if they're going to manipulate the cooperation agreement, try to manipulate kids to believe in a life, and you know, it's just like you just called out Michael Francis.
Right.
Last week we called out John Gotti Jr. Anthony, you know John Gotti Jr. cooperated. He's a proper agreement. What is he? Is he a rat? Yes or no?
Yeah.
So
once you sit, once you sit, it don't matter.
When the problem is they try to Machiavelli kids and they're trying to spin their minds who don't understand what an informant is. Because they come into the police, whether Michael Francis, whether it's a John Gotti Jr., whether it's anybody, when they go in and they inform or they sit and they proffer or they sit in the Queen of the Day or they do what Ronnie Warnham's opening statement did, we know our laws. And those laws, you would get decapitated and your head chopped off and you get dragged around and killed. We understand that. So the kids that don't understand that, their cooperator is no different. But the difference is we don't care. Just send the right message to the kids to change their life. Right. I says, and really, that's our message, right? Well, you're on the street, everybody's getting high, everybody's selling drugs, everybody's robbing. It's the sewage. This is the street. It's a sewer. It's not glamorous. We had you know, we're going to say, honestly, we're going to speak honestly, kids, we had some fun times, all of us.
Yeah.
I says, but those dimes are well gone. And this ain't the 60s, 70s, or 80s, or 90s anymore. It's done.
And if you get in trouble, you're on your own. If you get in trouble, you're on your own, and your family's on your own. Nobody's going to look out. When I was a kid, if I owed you money and I went to jail, that was squashed. That money was put on the side. They used to help you, not abuse you. Today, when I went to jail after my father died, they abused us. It was the complete opposite. Years ago, in the very early 60s, my father's crew, they clipped somebody from the neighborhood. And my father and his partner, Tony Lee, the guy had a wife and a son. I'm not saying justifying what they did, because what they did was a horrendous crime. That, you know, someone lost their lives. So I don't want anybody to think I'm justifying it. But what they did was they literally put the wife and the son on the payroll. And my father sent her money every week for 20 years.
Wow.
Later on in life, I actually met the woman, because she used to come. She didn't know that what they perpetrated against her husband. Years later, she would come and see Tony Lee. And Tony Lee told me that's who she was. They gave her money for 20 years. They put her on the payroll.
That's real deal stuff right there. That was who they were.
You know, that's who they were. And you know, but that's not how it is anymore.
Nah.
That ain't happening.
Nah. They rob you now when you go to jail. They take everything.
They take everything.
Hey guys, it's getting about that time where we got to wrap it up. And Ed, you're gonna come back on with us every so often. I
hope so. You might. There's so much more we could talk about.
Yeah, we could go on with stories, and I want you to tell us a couple more stories about your dad on the next show.
Yeah.
We're gonna have Robert Ingles on.
Yeah.
In the near future, we're gonna have next week. We're gonna have a surprise guest. There was a captain in Genovese family, and
I was locked up with him.
And yeah, you know him very well, and he's going to come on and tell us.
Locked up with me, yeah.
And you know, hopefully that these stories resonate for some young kids. And the bottom line is this: and we all have a mission, and I think our mission is the same. And I think, again, with Robert Ingles, I got to give him a lot of credit for what he's done. He never wavered off of anybody baiting him into being who he used to be.
No.
And he was one of the toughest guys out of our neighborhood. You know that. He was a shooter. He was a tough guy. He understood the mob, and he really stood his ground as far as doing the right thing with kids and moving the message. And Anthony, you have also, and really, the biggest thing is from the core, you haven't changed. Your brother has it. You have it. Your family has it. You're always humble, good people, and I think that's always going to carry no matter what you do. And I'm really over the years, I think that we learn some of the bad things we did isn't the way that's a good life. And hopefully we can change and save some kids from having the pain that we suffered. Yeah. And every week we're going to try to bring new guys in, new stories, and hopefully move this forward so kids really understand the life for the good and the bad. But overall, we know 90% of the life, 95% of the life is bad. Gene, you got anything to say before we end?
Yeah, Anthony, it was great seeing you, man.
Good seeing you too, cuz.
I look forward to talking to you again. I also want to say, you know, it's not like we're targeting anybody, but we're just trying to say, don't send mixed messages. You know, if you're going to be a person that's changing your life, then continue doing that. Don't glorify the life and then make it like you're a Christian. Just keep it real. You know, you did cooperate. You did sit. Just admit it. That's all we want. You know, just be yourself, you know, and admit to what you did and you're trying to change.
And Robin Angle is a perfect example of that. He is, you know, he talks his mission, you know, he loves Jesus and he talks about, he's for real. Right. He's for real, you know. He's
Well, he dedicated his life to Jesus. Yeah. I got to tell you, I never seen a guy that, and he's in my head all, you know, I talk to a lot of kids and I help a lot of kids and I'm involved in all kinds of programs. I got Gene involved in programs with me. But when I'm weak, I call you, and I call Robin. And I try to ask for some help, so I never ever go back the other way.
Exactly. When I got arrested and I was on home confinement, the priest in my, this young Irish priest in my, in Comac, he liked me. He used to come to my house every day and hang out with me. He used to come every day and hang out with me. Yeah, he had tattoos, you know. Yeah, he used to come every day and hang out with me. He loved me.
Cool.
Yeah, Father Sean. Yeah, he used to come every day, you know. Yeah, that, you know, I'm a completely different person today than I was years ago. You know what I mean? It's just a completely different, and it's so ironic because if someone would have told me 30 years ago or 35 years ago how I would be living today, I might have probably punched him in the mouth.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, can you do me a favor while you're talking? Just step to the side so people can see that picture behind you of your dad and mom. Listen, that's a great picture. I mean, that's something that people, you know, really that are watching us, I know they're going to really look at that and say, wow, that's something of really, it's an amazing photo.
And it was the gift from John.
Yeah, that's a history of Marvin. I know. Yeah, it was a gift to John Gotti, too. Yeah. So that's something something that people can really look at, and probably people will snap pictures of that and have that, because that's a legendary. Your dad was, you guys are a legendary family in the mob. That know, they do know now. And you know, remember, you guys that are still gambling out there is alightsports.com.
Alight Sports.
Everything's
closed. We got to get everything open.
Yeah.
We got to get the sport. We got to get the baseball season going. I miss my Yankees.
Yeah, I know that. We'll be back soon. I got an idea for sports, actually, for the owners. They should do the 15-minute test for every ball player, every coach, every umpire that comes onto the field, play the game, and then eventually have it won every 5 or 6 seats and get it going that way. At least you get it going, and the owners can pay for their own, as far as their own testing for their own players.
Yeah,
so you could get them back on the field that way and safely. In a good way to get America back. And the greatest country in the world. And North America,
that's
honestly,
sure.
I will say it. And and I'm always going to be behind the president. I think anytime we talk against him, it just weakens us. So I think
he's from Forest Hills, man.
Yeah, yeah. Columbus got to stop
he's
being
a homie.
Loser. I got to tell you, shut him out. She's just she's really a hater. And she better worry about getting people beds that are living on the street in San Francisco.
Stop
that nonsense trying to corner Machiavelli, the minorities, that you're going to hand them something.
I tell him all the time. I say, you got this guy's from Queens. Of course he talks like that. What do you want? What do you expect?
Hey, he talks from the hip. He's not a politician.
Love the guy. Are you kidding me? My daughter, my liberal daughter, she's another story. We'll talk about her another time. I love her too. She drank the Kool-Aid in college, my daughter.
Yeah. That's what usually happens when they're going to school.
Yeah, if I would have known, I would have slept on the campus.
All right, guys.
All right. It was a pleasure.
Have a good night. I'll enjoy telling Hal that I said hello.
All right.
See you guys.
Love you.
Love you guys. See you.
Be good.
Guys, you're at home, you're quarantined because of the COVID-19 outbreak. The casinos may be closed, but mybookie.ag is always open. Go to mybookie.ag and use promo code ALITE, A-L-I-T-E, and they'll match your first deposit for up to 50%.